This is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest today is Kate Grant, who was at the start of a lucrative career in advertising when a trip to Africa changed the course of her life. She discovered a population of women living with traumatic, debilitating injuries from childbirth, with no access to the medical services that could help them. At age 46, Kate became the founding CEO of a nonprofit foundation that works to help these women. And at 66, she's the author of her first book, a memoir coming out June 24th called No Woman Left Behind, A Journey of Hope to Heal Every Woman Injured in Childbirth. Welcome, Kate.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
First of all, what is fistula and how does it happen?
Well, fistula is a medical term, and it refers to a hole that shouldn't exist between an internal organ and the outside world. In this case, we're talking about obstetric fistula, and the holes are in the vagina, bladder, and sometimes rectum, and it leaves women incontinent. So again, it's holes created by childbirth that leave women incontinent, and that's the bad news. The good news is surgery, most of the time, can repair those women's injuries. It used to actually happen in this country. The site of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York, anybody who's been there on the Upper East Side, until the 1890s, there was a fistula hospital there because at that point, women's births were often most of the time happening at home. And if there was an obstructed labor, it could lead to a fistula. So that's the cause of fistula. It's obstetric fistula. It's an unrelieved obstructed labor. And the reason it doesn't exist here is now most births, nearly all, happen in hospitals where women that do have obstructed labor, like I did, get a C-section. Now they'll end up with, you know, scars, you know, and obviously stitches when they leave the hospital, but usually their baby's delivered healthy and alive. And the same is not true for women in sub-Saharan Africa, about half of which give birth at home. Fortunately, most of the time, even at home, most births go well, but for the percentage that are obstructed and a woman doesn't have access to the emergency obstetric care that we take for granted here, bad things can happen. A woman can die, or baby can die, but also if the birth doesn't kill her child, she can also end up with this horrible childbirth injury.
So that's part of the problem for these women, is that they can't get access to that surgery to correct it. And I read in your book that the reason that this happens in the first place for many women in Africa and Asia is malnourishment. Perhaps they're underdeveloped, and so their pelvic girdle is actually a little smaller.
That's true. One of the things that happens in countries that have food shortages, or you can end up with children being malnourished. And unfortunately, that tends to be girl children. They're fed less than boy children. And if you have years of malnourishment, you can end up being stunted, which is the clinical term for basically short stature, which can lead to a smaller pelvises. So that's part of the problem too. But again, if those women had access to emergency obstetric care, even with a small pelvis, they'd get a C-section that would relieve that obstructed labor. So the poverty is sexist, unfortunately, and often the people that are hurt most by poverty are women and girls. And fistula, in some ways, obstetric fistula is really, I would say, a symptom of bigger problems. But Vanessa, but at least with fistula, it's one thing that we can fix. One of the things that's been so satisfying about the work we've done at the Fistula Foundation is, this isn't a disease there's no cure for. We know that most of the time, 90%+ of the time, a trained surgeon can give this woman back her life and take her from often being socially outcast because of the incontinence and give her a new future. And so it's very satisfying to do this work. That said, there's a lot more to do there. For every woman we help, there are probably 50 that are still suffering needlessly. So that's what we do every day here at the foundation.
I noticed the foundation receives no government funding, and this is at a time where there's currently a lot of organizations in the news lately for having their federal funding cut. So describe your financial model. I know it involves some philanthropy, some grassroots activism.
Yeah. I would say most of our donors are individuals, not large foundations, although we're getting more significant support from bigger funders, philanthropists. But most of our donors are individuals and family foundations that see a woman hurting, want to help, and we're a way to do that and do it efficiently. I'm not against government funding of things. I studied public policy in graduate school. I believe in the power of government to change and transform lives, which then obviously begs the question, why don't we take government money? It's not a philosophical issue. It's that the government processes to get approval of funding were too onerous for us. I mean, we could just do a lot without that. We'd probably have to create a whole new grant making and seeking operation here. There's a lot of red tape that surrounded U.S. foreign aid, and it wasn't a good fit with our model, which is very focused on outcomes, and that outcome is these surgeries. So it's heartbreaking to see what's happened in many organizations, but we've never taken a penny from any government, so it hasn't affected us really at all.
Well, you're fortunate there. You've been lucky enough to develop a lot of strategic partnerships. This is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. My guest is Kate Grant, who at 46 became the founding CEO of the Fistula Foundation. At age 66, she's now coming out with her first book, which talks about her experiences going back to school in her 30s to study public policy and how she used her new skills to serve a life-changing mission. The memoir is called No Woman Left Behind: A Journey of Hope to Heal Every Woman Injured in Childbirth. Kate, just to back up a little bit, you discovered this condition while you were on a trip around the world. What was going on in your mind when you decided to take that leave of absence to travel?
I was in my, I don't know, late 20s, and I had been working in advertising, and I had, like many people, I helped put myself, my parents helped, but I worked every summer and Christmas, and I really had just been on a kind of achievement track for a long time, and had kind of climbed to a middle of a ladder on in a Madison Avenue career, and I wasn't looking to save the world. This was not, I was not like a Mother Teresa in training here. I just cue more like girls want to have fun and took off for a trip. I'd never done that kind of study abroad thing or, you know, traveled in Europe after graduation. I'd gone to a job. I'd gone, as many people do, and but thought I've got enough money now. It'd be nice to see the world. And what happened was, when we saw Europe, that didn't change my mind in any significant way. But we spent about half of 7 months traveling through Southeast Asia. You know, India, Nepal, what was then Burma is now Myanmar, Indonesia, and day in and day out, saw a level of poverty that I just in my middle class American life had not seen. I saw people, you know, didn't have clean water, didn't have, you know, more than a bike on a dirt road to get from point A to point B, you know, no washing machines, no dryers, just things that you take for granted here. Again, water out of the tap, for instance, the toilet, you know, I mean, just people that didn't have these things. And I came back, my advertising life gradually started to not make a lot of sense to me. I mean, in the sense of this is my one and only life, and I'm basically telling people to have an emotional connection to a branded product, which often doesn't really make a difference. I mean, is really is it important to drink Pepsi rather than Coke? Is a pair of Wranglers that much better than a pair of Levi's or whatever the branded product is? I was putting a lot of time and energy with some very smart, creative people into creating emotional connections to something that really doesn't matter. You know, you really have a reckoning of the soul and realizing that's how you're spending your life. Yeah, it was it that trip changed me. And then I went back to graduate school because I'm kind of one of those people that prepares and plans. I didn't just start a nonprofit out of nowhere. I realized I didn't have the skills to do that.
Okay, I was actually curious about the timing of that. I'm glad you mentioned graduate school. So I see you graduated from the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley, and then so it was later that you earned a master's in public affairs at Princeton.
Yeah, there was a decade in there. Like I graduated since I graduated in 1980 from undergrad. And then it was 94 that I graduated from Princeton. So there was I had 11 years in advertising before I had sort of a reckoning of the soul about what I was doing. And it was at the time I was an account director at an agency, and I think I was the youngest one at the agency. So I'd achieved something in my life. I was making more money than my younger self could have dreamed of. And so leaving that behind, that took me a while to get to that decision because I built something, and then to decide to just leave it behind. I mean, one of the things I looked at was, well, maybe I should just do a lateral move and move into something similar in the nonprofit world. And then I thought, nope, I want to start over again. And I want to build the skill set. That was the idea of going back to graduate school. I was thinking I was the second oldest person in my grad school class. People were generally a little bit younger than I was. But that for me, that was the right decision. The Princeton program, I felt fortunate to be in. It was small. It had an endowment, so I didn't have to tap into my retirement money, which is what I was planning on doing to fund it. And it gave me the skills that I use every day at the foundation. I'm grateful for that chapter.
And then you were 46 when you joined the foundation as the CEO, and it was your first experience with running a nonprofit. So how would you say you've changed through that whole process?
Oh, you know, it's been such a gift. I mean, we were very small when I took over. We were funding one hospital in one country. I had, you know, one full-time employee other than me and somebody that worked till two processing checks. So we were a lot smaller. Fast forward, you know, 19, 20 years, and we're, you know, we're now the largest funder of these in surgeries in the world. We've funded over 100,000 surgeries. We've got partners in over 30 countries. We've got 170 partner hospitals and outreach organizations that we work with. And so that obviously was built over the last two decades, not over, you know, two months or 2 years even. But it's been extraordinarily satisfying just to put my life energy, such as it is, into something that speaks to my heart so deeply. My younger self, the one that was off using whatever talents I had to get people to care about a branded salad dressing, feels grateful that I could use the skills I developed on Madison Avenue to get people to care about women that have too often been forgotten, hence the name of my book, No Woman Left Behind. And that is the alchemy of being able to use skills that I, when I left behind, I sort of painted as kind of the dark arts of, you know, advertising, and to be able to use some of those marketing skills to a mission that is meaningful to me and I know does change lives. I don't change those lives. I'm not in the operating room. The heroic doctors are the ones doing it, but I'm a link in a chain of love. I'm just grateful.
And this book seems to be a link in the chain of love, because I see that 100% of net proceeds from the book will support Fistula Foundation's Love a Sister program, which funds free surgeries for women in need, which is terrific. And I'm wondering what your writing background was before you published this book.
I'm a self-taught writer, let's put it that way. I've done writing for the Huffington Post. I mean, as a free writer, I think they're mostly looking for content. And in the first decade or so of the foundation, I was too cheap basically to hire a writer. I wanted to put the money into surgery, so I was writing all the newsletters. So I think I developed, you know, sort of journeyman writing skills just out of necessity. Quite candidly, though, with the book, Vanessa, I lost both my parents in quick succession, and I was kind of devastated by grief. And I started writing as a cathartic process almost, and I wasn't sure if I had a book in me. That's where this started. I was trying to kind of, what have I learned over the 20 years? And the book over the last, you know, better part of 3 years sort of emerged on nights and weekends and a few weeks off here and there. But I was hoping to tell a story with the book that people that were where I was in their 20s, not just women, but maybe in some ways, maybe more so women, but they would see maybe I started off on the wrong path because at 21 or 22, I didn't know myself, or I just didn't know enough about the world. And to find a path, not that they have to obviously my path, but one that speaks to their heart, and then just to keep going. And so part of that was, again, sort of a story for my younger self, but at the same time, the work that we do, I believe in it to my core. I know I've met women in multiple countries whose lives are transformed by this surgery. And so if the book can open up some hearts and minds, and maybe along the way a few wallets too, I'll have hopefully done my job with it. And as you said, 100% of the profits go to support our work. I'm not personally gaining from this. It's about the foundation and the women we help.
And last note, what is the website if people would like to learn more?
www.fistulafoundation.org. That's just Fistula, F-I-S-T, like fist, U-L-A, foundation.org. And at the bottom, there's a link to a page on our website with more information about how you can pre-order the book. Or I've been fortunate to get some endorsements from some amazing people like Hillary Clinton. The best-selling author, Abraham Verghese, wrote the foreword to the book. I tried to make it a good read, so you don't need to be a public health expert to read it at all. Again, it'll hopefully open more hearts to the work we do.
Well, I can vouch for our listeners that it is a good read. Kate Grant, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest was Kate Grant, CEO of the Fistula Foundation, which funds surgeries to correct debilitating childbirth injuries throughout Africa and Asia. Her memoir, No Woman Left Behind, is a Reader's Choice Book Award finalist and a winner of the 2025 International Book Awards in the autobiography category.